In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The Michael Reid Show podcast. Tune in weekdays from 9 on LMFM. To contact us, email now, michael@lmfm.ie.
Friday morning, the 12th of April. Good morning, with much debate and discussion from now till 11 a.m. This is Michael Reid on LMFM. The D Hotel in Drogheda is the best example in Ireland of a government that is totally out of its depth on immigration. The hotel is contracted to accommodate 500 international protection applicants. This news was announced after the contracts were signed. When it was made public, there were calls for the hotel to become a dual-purpose hotel, using half of the hotel to provide accommodation to asylum seekers, while the other half would continue to function as a normal hotel. This, it was argued, would prevent the town, with a population of more than 40,000 people, from losing its only functioning hotel, so that it would be available for local events and indeed as a place to stay for visiting tourists. Just to remind you of what happened next, Minister Rodrigo Gorman said no, that wasn't possible because of child protection concerns. Then the Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, said yes, it is actually possible. In fact, he said it's already happening in Blanchardstown and in Dundalk, and there was no reason that it couldn't happen in Drogheda. A number of ministers lined up behind the Taoiseach to support his position. Minister Rodrigo Gorman then said that was what he wanted to happen and that he would do everything possible to make it happen, for the hotel to be a dual-purpose hotel. It didn't happen, and the minister reverted to his original position, saying that it was not possible for the D to become a dual-purpose hotel because of child protection concerns. So the government has signed a contract we estimate to be worth €25 million over 2 years, based on 500 residents living in the D at a cost of €70 per pillow per night. €25 million is a lot of money. But now it transpires that the hotel's fire certificate does not allow so many people to live in the hotel. Instead of 500 people, the fire certificate allows for just 240 people, more than half the amount of people the hotel is contracted to house.
I want to repeat again that Drogheda people are extremely angry and dismayed by Minister Gorman's decision to remove the only remaining hotel of scale, the D Hotel in Drogheda, for public use. The government have actually acknowledged that this will not happen in any other town, but that means nothing to the people of Drogheda. We continue to be dismayed at the lack of an appropriate and proper impact assessment and appropriate support packages for business, for communities, for tourism, and frankly, for families. And if this government intends to restore their a measure of confidence in this administration, which I have supported, in what they're doing in Drogheda, well, they've a hell of a lot more to do. People like me have been completely and utterly blindsided by this decision. Not alone that, but I'm now aware that the original contract, as itemised by the minister, for 500 beds could not have actually been signed at that time, because up to yesterday, close of business, the fire safety cert only allows 240 people to reside there. So the question, one other further question is, are we paying for 500 beds when we can only fill 250, 240, and who is making the profit or the difference? Also, you're right about the women and children and the fear and trouble that they have in other countries. Drogheda welcomes them all the time, and we continue to welcome them. But you cannot have them walk in the streets of Drogheda with plastic bags in the rain, with nowhere to go, no centre to go
Thank
to.
Thank you, Deputy.
Or people who live in the town can't get their families to stay in the only hotel that was there. I represent their anger. And I want you, Tánaiste, there to do something about it.
Local Fine Gael TD Fergus O'Dowd was raising this issue in the Dáil yesterday with Tánaiste Micheál Martin.
I think the most effective way to do anything about this is to try and implement as quickly as we can the policy position that was adopted recently by government in respect of the direct construction of state-owned centres parallel with the private sector that is providing the majority of the accommodation to date. The problem, we just discussed it earlier in terms of the EU Asylum Pact, all across Europe, across the world, there is unprecedented levels of migration. And many countries and many political parties have risen on the strength of it. We've seen what happened in the United Kingdom, where Brexit became a consequence of migration. It changed the whole politics of Britain, with devastating results, I would argue, in terms of economy and so on. So it's not simple. And I think the idea of the only hotel being used is something the government acknowledges is not something we want to do.
But
and,
you've done that.
Look, I'm saying alternative development has to happen.
But what happens in the meantime? What happens in the meantime?
I've no doubt that will be opposed also. I've no doubt about that. I'm just realistic about it. And any party in this
house
who aspires to be in government, this is going to be an ongoing issue.
That's not good enough at all.
Right, there you go. That's Fergus O'Dowd telling the Tánaiste his response wasn't good enough. Fergus O'Dowd joins us on the line now, and a very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us on the programme today. What is it you would have liked to have heard from Micheál Martin?
Well, what it did was, you see, when you raise a matter in the Dáil like that, you always let the minister know or the Taoiseach or the Tánaiste, you know, what you're going to raise to give, so that we'll be able to give an appropriate response. What I actually asked was that they would talk about putting an appropriate package in place. Obviously, the people that are residing there, they're not going to disappear overnight. They're going to be there for some time. But is there an opportunity to revisit that whole issue based on the published figures of 500 and the fact that, as we speak, they can't have more than 240 there? Is there an appropriate package where you can implement to support business, tourism? Why don't we have a package for the shops in the town that they all get a grant to update their premises? Why don't we find, and I've already identified two issues locally, a centre for people who come into the town who would be migrants, somewhere like the Dominican Church, which is owned by the council, where people, instead of walking up and down the town in the rain, as I said, that they could go there, have a cup of tea, meet other people, meet the public, integrate in the community. Also, there's a possibility of a new sports centre or rejuvenating an existing sports centre in the town. Yeah. There's lots of constructive things that can be done, Michael.
Okay.
And that's what I'm talking about. That's why I was particularly concerned that, as the poem says, I was wasting my sweetness in the desert air. And, you know, I mean, the people are angry. And there are rumours sweeping the town, as you know, about other places as well. And I just want the government to get a handle on this.
Yeah.
To understand, you know, we want to play our part, we will play our part, but you have to listen to us as well.
Mm. I presume there's only 240 residents in the D Hotel because of the fire cert. That dictates that. We contacted the D Hotel for comment on this, and they say fire health and safety is paramount, and it's their number one priority. So I presume that the number of people staying in the hotel is in line with the certificate.
Well, if it isn't, they're breaking the law and they're putting them at risk.
No, but we've heard that the hotel say that that's a priority, so we have to assume that there are just 200.
Oh, no, of course, yeah.
Certainly no more than that. But the contract is for 500 people.
That's the point. That's the whole point. See, the other point, Michael, on this, and this is what concerns me greatly, I've asked to see that contract. I've asked to see the terms of the contract. So all I can go on is what the briefing note, which you would have got like me on the 13th of February, which states two things very clearly. From the 5th of March, onwards, 500 beds would be provided at the D Hotel. And the second sentence is that all statutory requirements have been met, including health and safety, fire, building regulations and other requirements. That is, that cannot be true, because you can't have 500 people there. Now, I checked with the council. I had to pay my fee to get the copy of the fire cert. The last fire cert was 2022, and that meant, what I was told was that the maximum number that can be in the hotel with the present regulations is 240, full stop. So what is going on here? And I mean, you know, I want to get to the bottom of that, but I also want the solution, Michael, and it's about getting a solution.
Well,
it's about not, you know, sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, because I want to go to the next obvious question before you move on from that. And it's a question that you asked the Taoiseach yesterday. It wasn't answered in the Dáil yesterday. Indeed, it's a question that we've put to the Minister, Roderick O'Gorman. It's also a question that we've put to the Department of Integration. And that question is the state paying the D Hotel for 500 residents when the hotel is only accommodating 240 residents maximum? We haven't had a response, I have to say, of any description from the Minister or from the Department. And your question in the Dáil was ignored by the Taoiseach yesterday.
Yeah, no, I know that now. And the point I'm making is, Michael, I have further questions down for next week. And I'm not going to let this issue go, you know, and because obviously we need a lot more transparency. I don't know if Mr. Gorman took up the opportunity that you offered him to go on his show, but he is accountable, you know, to me as a TD in the Dáil, and he's accountable to the public. He's accountable to people of Drogheda for his decisions. It may be he won't agree with us, fine. Well, let's go on the air and debate them, you know, and I mean, you know, whatever case he has to make, let him make it, but you know, he can't hide behind officialdom. He can't hide behind, you know, this is what we notice in the public domain. And I want, you know, I just want to get to the bottom of it. But I also want to repeat again, we need solutions. We need solutions. And we don't want to drive people into the hands of those others who would lead them up a path of conflict and you know what I'm talking about there. Yeah. So we want to be, draw the people, welcome new residents. But we need to have appropriate scale. There needs to be nationally, right around the whole country. Everybody has to step up to the mark. You can't have Drogheda stepping up for everybody else and nobody else getting involved. And that's part of the problem. And if the rumours I'm hearing are true, you know, and they're only rumours, and I don't know if you've heard them, but, like, you know, they're just not listening to us, Michael. They're just not listening to us. And it will lead to an appalling situation if they don't deal with it. I will be raising it again. I've raised it at the parliamentary party as well on Wednesday night. And I will continue to raise it, and that's my job. And I know I am a government TD, and I take responsibility, and I have to stand over decisions, but I cannot and will not stand over this one.
I don't know if Roderick O'Gorman is too important to speak to the listeners of LMFM, or if the listeners aren't important enough to be informed by the minister through LMFM, or I don't know if the minister is too busy to speak to the listeners of LMFM about an issue that is of great importance locally and nationally, but with the impact being felt locally, as you've very strongly highlighted already this morning and indeed over a long period of time. But I do know that the minister has declined every invitation that we have made for him to participate in this programme, and has declined all invitations to speak to us. On this occasion, we've asked in writing, I suppose taking into account that this programme and its listenership isn't important enough for the minister to speak to directly, but we've had no response, written or otherwise, at this stage from Roderick O'Gorman or his officials in the department.
That's appalling, Michael. That's absolutely appalling, isn't it? I mean, here you are. We live in a democracy. Here's the minister who's made a decision. He won't explain it. He won't elaborate on what's going on. He won't tell us how much it's costing. He's going to You know, he's just getting people's backs up. And the key point is moderate, normal, ordinary people who are not extreme in any way are so angry at this. And they're right to be angry. So, look, I'll carry the battle as best I can forward. And that's my job. And it's a job, obviously, that I'm happy to do and we continue to do. But, you know, this is, as I said to the Taoiseach, that this is not a good enough response.
I take it, though, that you're concerned that the contracts obligate the state to pay for the 500.
Something. Yeah, well, I mean, we don't know, but if that is the case, you see, my whole point is that this contract, this is the point I made earlier, couldn't be a legal contract in the context of how can you contract for 500 and say you've done all the statutory queries. In other words, fire, that it is safe. Now, it is perfectly safe right now, I want to stress that, but it's not deemed to be a fire and safety issue to go from 240 to 500, you know, without appropriate and other works being done, the list of which I'm unable to get as well. But I do know that was promised, as you know, it was promised back in February when we heard all this. Now, it doesn't mean that they can't be done or won't be done, but there is no application for them as we speak. So, like, I mean, so that's you know, 260 places being paid for at least, 6 weeks? How much is it in mind by could you have there?
I'm told the going rate is €70 per pillow, yes.
Yeah, but it's not good, and it's concentrating, it's taking our energy away from the work that must be done, which is to meet the people in Drogheda, to come down and meet them, to meet now and say what you propose to do and listen to proposals. Like, we have fantastic money spent in the town, on the Drogheda Implementation Board. There's been 16 million put in by Helen McEntee and other ministers into our infrastructure in our town. So I think we should meet. What I would like to see is the Implementation Board, the Chamber of Commerce, the local council, to talk about these things. With the minister, so let him get up off his butt and travel down to Drogheda if he's, let him do that.
Well, I imagine people would want the minister to do that because this is a back of the envelope calculation, but it's not a very complicated calculation. 260 by 70 per night is €18,200 a night, which the government may or not be paying out for nothing. The point here is that your concern is that the government is paying for 260 beds that cannot be used because the fire cert will not allow more than 240 beds and the contract is for 500 beds. So they're paying for 260 beds. If the rate is €70 per person or per pillow per night, that's €18,200 every night in the bin.
But that's but the point is they're not giving us any other calculation because they're not telling us, they won't confirm or deny it.
And for
those
260 people who are not in the D hotel, they're obviously being accommodated somewhere else at a cost of €70 a night, another €18,200.
Well, there you are. Yeah. Well, that's what it sounds like, but you know, like, it's not good enough, Michael, and that's my whole point. And instead of wasting all that money, if that is the case, and we don't actually know because they haven't answered you or me, either in the Dáil or you as a professional journalist, you know, why aren't we concentrating on getting money into the town, giving the money to the businesses to improve the streets, giving the money to the community organisations, you know, looking after a place for these people to go to. I don't know if you see, they walk across the town in the rain. Where are they going to go? As I understand it, they can't go into the only recreation space, bigger space, in the hotel itself. They can't go in there because it's open to the public, I understand. Yeah. That means the only, apart from the cabin fever they get in the bedroom, which you will get if you're in a hotel bedroom for whatever length of time it is, where are you going to go? You haven't a blade of grass to sit on. You've nowhere to go. And I mean, that's crazy stuff, you know.
And nothing to see here seems to be the response. No response. And hopefully people will get tired of asking.
We won't, Michael, and you won't either.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, I just don't understand it. I just can't understand how amateurish it all is, that you'd go into contracts and, as I outlined at the beginning of the programme, you regret going into those contracts, because that certainly would seem to be the case given the different positions Roderick O'Gorman has adopted over time. He said it wasn't possible, then he said, oh well, the Taoiseach said it's possible, so I'm going to try and make it happen, and then he came back and said no, it's not possible, and so on, and then you go ahead with the contract as planned and discover that the whole thing is flawed. It's amateur hour, isn't it?
Yeah. No, as you say, if there's 18,000 euros a week being wasted...
A night.
...for beds... A night, sorry. It's always a week, Michael. Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, my Lord, God. That's crazy stuff. I mean, that's not... That is absolutely appalling. So, look, but if they tell us that that isn't the case, I would certainly accept that. But they won't tell me anything. Mm. They even refused to tell me, Michael, what the name of the company was that was managing it. Because I was trying to find out, were the owners of the hotel a different company from the company who's managing this whole other process? Right. And they won't tell me that either. Okay. It's like the Secret Service,
yeah.
You know?
We asked the hotel.
It's like living out in East Germany or Soviet Stalinist Russia or somewhere.
Yeah. Well, we spoke to a spokesperson on behalf of the hotel, who told us that health and safety is a priority, which...
Sure.
Would reassure us that there are no more than 240 people in the hotel. You'd have to assume that that is the case, because that's what
you
the fire service...
But Michael, can you ask the same spokesman how much they're getting paid for each?
Yes, we did. I was just coming to that. We didn't ask how much they're getting paid for each person. What we asked was, are they getting paid for 500 people or are they getting paid for 240 people? We were told that that's a question for the department because of GDPR.
Yeah, Michael, that's it. So, look, this is the stupidity of it all, because they just won't tell us the truth, whatever the truth is. I mean, whatever it is, we live with it, but if it means if we can, out of this absolute appalling fiasco, we can get action for the town of Drogheda and get community support, behind what we have to do with people who are entitled to seek international protection and take our fair share, but not have this situation, which is an unmitigated disaster. And the reason we're all saying this, Michael, you and me, is because they won't tell us what the truth is. Tell us the truth and let's get on with get solutions.
Yeah, well, maybe...
This is going to get worse, not better.
Maybe you have to be... in a certain position, or you have a certain age, or whatever, I don't know, to hear the truth. Maybe the truth isn't for the ears of the minions listening to LMFM. I don't know. I don't know if that's the attitude either. It probably isn't, but I don't know of any other plausible explanation. We'll leave it there for the moment, though. Thank you indeed. I think we will be hearing more about this. Thanks very much, Fergus O'Dowd, Fine Gael TD in Louth and East Meath. I think we will be hearing more about this because it is a significant development, and it really does pose serious questions about an already disastrous immigration policy that is dividing this country in the most bitterest of ways. And is it any wonder, when this sort of amateur, cack-handed approach is being taken to an issue like this, beyond belief? What do you think? I don't know. Am I overstating it? Or would you agree with what I'm saying? Or would you even go further? I don't know. But I'm just stating it as I see it this morning. And we'd like to hear from you. 041-983-2000, our telephone number. Text or WhatsApp 086-1800-658. Email michael@lmfm.ie.
Michael Reed on LMFM.
There are some comments. Matthew in Drogheda says, Michael, Fergus O'Dowd pretending not to be in government. It was Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, Green Party's choice. All this stuff with Fergus saying, it's not my fault. It's crap. The book stops with Fergus and co. Thanks, Matthew. Fergus O'Dowd, I think in fairness to him, went out of his way to say, I am a government TD, but I think what's happening is terrible. A number of people did pick up on the very same point that Matthew made in his comment. I'll get to those comments now. A different one, though, from somebody. I won't read out all of your comments, listener, but thanks for sending in the information. It says, Michael, I'm listening to your show, and I'd advise anyone else to check out the shell companies who are providing asylum accommodation and the links that they have with different companies, all available on the CRO and other company databases, and questions about why they're doing it. Thanks. As I say, I've heavily edited that text because of legal reasons. But I think the main thrust of the point our caller was trying to get through was that this is a license to print money, and it's a terrible thing, but we're using vulnerable people, or some people are using vulnerable people to make profit, and these are people who are coming from war, torture, persecution, execution, and so on, to flee any of those things and end up in Ireland, and are then seen as a license to print money, because there's a lot of money in providing accommodation to international protection applicants. Somebody else in touch with us saying, what are we doing for people in Drogheda who need a place to live and can't house our own people? I'm one of them. I think you're a bit misguided in how you're looking at this. The people in the D Hotel are not doing anything in any way whatsoever to stop you from getting a house. The government is not doing anything with those people in the D Hotel in any way whatsoever that would stop you from getting a house. They put them into the D Hotel. You see people in City West. You see people in other accommodation centres. They're the type of places that are being used for immigrants coming to the country, not for people like you who are entitled to go on the housing waiting list. And people get social housing in this country by doing that, because we live in a great country where we do that for people who can't provide for themselves. Other people who can provide for themselves go to work, they save, they get a mortgage, they buy a house. And this is a country where a lot of people have already done that. Of course, it's a problem nowadays, undoubtedly, for young people. But, you know, I think we're talking about two different topics, and I don't think that anybody should be confusing the two. Somebody else saying the Westcourt Hotel in Drogheda also has refugees. Yes, it accommodates Ukrainians, but that happened, and the D Hotel was a functioning normal hotel. The hotel, so when it was given over as an accommodation centre, it meant that Drogheda had lost all of its hotels. Of course, you've got Boyne Valley outside, and you've City North and so on, and Scholars, which has 16 bedrooms, a bespoke hotel. But there you go. Anyway, that's just some of the comments coming to us so far. 0419832000, text or WhatsApp 0861800658, email michael@lmfm.ie.
Michael Reid on LMFM.
Well, there's been a lot of focus on road safety this week with the passing of the road traffic bill through the Oireachtas yesterday, now to be signed into law by the President, and indeed an entire primetime programme on RTE television last night. Susan Gray, co-founder of Park, is on the line with us. Good morning to you, Susan. Thanks for joining us as always. I understand you're expecting a call from the Taoiseach today. What do you intend to say to Mr. Harris?
Well, we'll be hoping for a meeting. And the previous Taoiseach Leo Varadkar passed on information on the work that we do. So hopefully he'll be up to date on all the issues of concern that we've had, that we raised with Leo Varadkar last August and then December, and at the Ministerial Road Safety Committee meeting in November. So hopefully he'll be well briefed, and we're looking forward to working with him and continuing our work maybe with Minister Chambers. And as for the RSA, I don't know where we're going with them.
Have you confidence in the RSA?
No, none whatsoever.
26 groups expressed no confidence in the Road Safety Authority this week, I think.
Yeah, we're not part of that petition. But
that makes 27 then, doesn't it?
No, we're not part of that group.
Mm. No, I'm sorry, but I mean, to add to that number of groups.
Oh, yeah. Like, Michael, we have 63 dead so far. 26 of them were under 30, just starting off in their life, 41%. And we welcomed Prime Time covered our issues on disqualified drivers last night and reported our figures and research done on it. And Aisling Reid from Park appeared on it. That family's been campaigning for years since the death of Carol Robinson in a crash in Dublin in 2017, where he was knocked down and killed by a three-time disqualified driver. Three active disqualifications at the time. And they joined Park and are campaigning since. And they're very disappointed at times, you know, when they seem to be up one step and down two, but you have to keep fighting the fight and keep helping them, because if you give up, Michael, nothing will change. So hopefully now we have a new Taoiseach, and he has said to the media last week that road safety, he's going to make it a priority, one of his priorities. So watch this space and we'll see what happens. But and last night too in prime time, we welcomed Paula Hillman, the Assistant Commissioner for Roads, placing, saying that they hope, I don't like the word aim, but anyway, to have 75 more Gardaí Central Roads placing by the end of this year.
And
I don't know where she's going to get them from.
No, but the point made that they've lost 150.
Yes, I know, but you have to welcome any initiative. But we've lost, we had... Last count was 627. We've lost at least three since that. So by the end of the year, if they do manage to increase the number by 75, it may well just about cover the ones that are going now. And there's more going next in May, June and July. So it's not looking good, Michael. And we will be calling on the Gardaí Commissioner to take immediate action, because he said he's going to ensure that the Gardaí will all have to do a 30-minute stint of their shift in policing the roads. And it's a directive he sent out yesterday to take immediate effect. But we're asking questions on that.
Yeah,
so
nobody understands
we'll
it.
We'll see.
Nobody understands how that's going to play out.
And I don't know how happy the Gardaí will be at getting that directive like yesterday. Anyway, we'll see. A lot more has to be done, and we'll just keep highlighting it. And thanks a million for listening to our group and passing on, highlighting our... the research that we do. And we will continue, Michael.
I know that.
If they fail, we will be the first to be highlighting it. And promises are all fine and well.
But we hate
the words that by the end of the year, or a review started, or we're at an advanced stage on something. We're sick and tired of them words. We want to know what's happening.
Well, I know the next time that I speak to you, Susan, I know the next time I speak to you will be similar to today, that there will be more people who are alive today who have lost their lives.
Exactly, and they're so unaware of it. And the families, there'll be more families grieving. We're working with a particular family now that lost their son last November, and to hear them on the phone, Michael, would break your heart. And they're so appreciative of the help that we can give them, but they're in a dark void, and they're not getting the answers that we believe they deserve. They've got a copy of our Finding Your Way guide that we produced in 2012, letting them know what their rights are and what questions to ask and what information they're entitled to. But Michael, they continually phone us, and what the service they're getting is not the service that we'd expect them to get. So we will keep educating them, and hopefully they will get answers and get some kind of peace, you know.
And some cause for hope when you speak to Taoiseach Simon Harris later today. Susan,
yes,
I have to leave it there. But thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Always, for joining us today. Susan Gray is the co-founder of the Road Safety Group Park.
Michael Reid on LMFM.
Now, more of your comments. Thanks to everybody who's been in touch with us today. Tom says, Michael, as for Gardaí doing 30 minutes roads policing, great idea, but just get on with it and do it. It's not rocket science. Gardaí just need to get off their hands and police the roads, Tom says. Thank you, Tom. We'll see in time how it's managed. I think that's probably the big question at this stage. It's one thing saying every guard has to do 30 minutes of roads policing today, but they've other things to do, and I'm not sure how that's going to work in reality. John says, can Louth County Council do the O'Reilly's building on Narrow West Street up? It's been idle since 2019. And it only cost $8 million. I don't know. Do the council still own it, John? It's certainly been a very strange experience to see that building, which was a thriving business and in the centre of the town, prime location, prime piece of property. It is in use to some degree, isn't it? But I think there's lots of potential there, all right, and it's an interesting point. I don't know. Navin, listener in touch with us, saying the government should spend money on more speed detection vans and minimum speed cameras. Changing speed limits is a waste of money because drivers ignore them, as they do 50 in and out of old Johnstown Village in Navin. Thank you. I think that's exceeding 50, is it? Clare in County Meath says, Michael, there's audits done in every company in the country. Why not check the government out? I nearly fell out of my standing yesterday when I read the paper. Front headline, government paying $1 million per month for looking after Ukrainian dogs. I love dogs. What about people who need cancer treatment? What about the children who need procedures? I could go on. I think you make a valid point, Claire. I think that, yes, the government was paying $1 million for dogs, but I think that's changed and it's no longer the case. But yeah, you still make a very valid point. We'd another text then from somebody who says, Michael, I thought you were very wrong when you were talking there about people who work to get their own home, and that you were being flippant about going on a housing list too. You do actually realise that some people are 10 years on waiting lists for homes, and yes, they are having a very hard time because rents are colossal, because the cost of living is rising all of the time. I do. But, you know, you can go on a housing waiting list, and I think a lot of people go on a housing waiting list when they're very young, because I do see very young people in social housing. So they must have gone on the housing waiting list, as you said, 10 years ago. And that's an opportunity. If they have that opportunity, then everybody has that opportunity, don't they? A lot of people want to fend for themselves and work, save, get a mortgage, buy a house. That's been the tradition, I suppose, for most people. It is becoming all the more difficult now, as you say, quite correctly, because people are living at home or aren't living at home as they would have years ago. They're moving out and paying colossal rents, and it's ridiculous. And that's undoubtedly one of the reasons why so many people went abroad last year. 34,000 to Australia, people going to every corner of the country. We're losing a generation of young people because housing is just too expensive, not something that they can aspire to. In this country, there's no doubt there are these problems, but they're separate problems. And this is the point that I was making. The people who are in the D Hotel or who are in City West or in the West Court or wherever you can think of, they're not impacting on that. They're not on the housing waiting list. They're not competing for housing with people who are looking for housing in this country. Back to road safety. And Ellen says the problem with road safety is the roads, but they won't admit the problem. The RSA is just there to make money, getting well paid to sit on their backsides. Thanks, Ellen, for that. You could have a point again, though. There's always that thing of you should adjust your driving to the conditions. That's like if you're in dense fog on a motorway, you don't drive at 120 kilometres an hour because you can't see what's ahead of you and could rear end somebody. And we saw that happen with car after car after car piling up not so long ago. Or if you're driving on a country road that's more like Beirut because of the amount of potholes, again, you should slow down. But yeah, again, I think you do have a point, and it doesn't excuse the roads being in that state. And of course, they should be repaired because it is dangerous. Somebody else saying, I was driving the other day and a car coming towards me. I could only see the top.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's R-E-B-A-G.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Above her head, she was either painting her toes or texting on her phone. Scary, knowing that she wasn't watching the road. I knew it was a woman driver, sunglasses on her head. Shocking. I don't know what the sunglasses on her head bit is. Thanks for your message, though. Interesting thought. Hopefully something will happen sooner than later. And the government is pinning its hopes on the road traffic bill, which is now going to the president to sign in law as it passed through its final stage of the Oireachtas and Shannadarran yesterday.
Worst year on our roads in almost a decade in 2023. Sadly, we're currently on a trend for a significantly worse year again in 24. And systemic action to turn this trend is urgently needed. To bring about this change, the bill targets three priority areas relevant to driver behaviour: increased sanctions through penalty point reform, mandatory drug testing at the scene of serious collisions to help tackling the growing issue of drug driving and the introduction of safer default speed limits.
Right, that's the Minister with responsibility for road safety, Jack Chambers, speaking in Shannon yesterday.
With regards to speed limits, with the enactment of this bill, I will be engaging with local authorities to move quickly and in a coordinated fashion to conduct their own speed limit reviews. And following that then, speed limit bylaws in accordance with their devolved powers that councillors have, such as the new speed limit framework being implemented then.
OK, that'll be interesting when it happens. I've a feeling we'll be getting complaints from people who are well used to driving safely at certain speeds, being told that they have to reduce their speed whilst others continue to ignore the speed limits. Somebody in touch with us by text saying it's a joke having speed vans, everybody flashing each other warning of speed cameras. I think that's from Alice, is it? Thanks, Alice. Eamon says, I'm 22 years of age and I'm on a housing waiting list. Thanks, Eamon. I think people would say you're very wise. Another text from somebody who asks why the Gardaí do not make sure pedestrians walk on the correct side of the road and wear high-vis jackets. I'm sure that might have to do, or it might be a problem in the dark, people wearing black clothes and drivers can't see them till it's too late. Children and junior infants get high-vis vests when they start school, but I never see any of them on children. Another interesting call. Thank you very much indeed for that. And another caller says, the problem with drivers today is that driving requires common sense, and common sense is not that common anymore. Thank you. Another caller asks, how much did the Road Safety Authority make last year? I don't think the Road Safety Authority made anything last year. It would have been funded to the tune of millions. I don't have the figure. I'm sure we can get that for you. It's all public knowledge and published and available publicly. But they don't make money. They are funded, but they don't make money. That money goes into the various aspects of the work of the Road Safety Authority. Claire is in County Meath, and she's sent in a text to us, and she says, Michael, so many road deaths, I think, are because of how many people are taking drugs now, not alcohol, and this needs to stop. Well, they are doing drug testing, and I think that was evident, Claire, in the latest bank holiday clampdown and all of the road checks and the amount of people who were found to be intoxicated with drink or drugs, as the case may be. Another valid point. Thank you for making it on our programme today. Let me give you our telephone number if you want to add to what's being said. It's 041 983 2000. You can text or WhatsApp as well if you want to make a comment on 086 1800 658, or you can email michael@lmfm.ie.
Michael Reid on LMFM.
Well, members of Fianna Fáil will meet this weekend for the party's Ordesh. The Minister for Education, Norma Foley, joins us now. And a very good morning to you, Minister. Thank you indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. An opportunity for your members to come together and focus on, I'm sure, the local and European elections in the short term and the general election thereafter. What's the mood in the party, do you think?
Oh, I think it's very positive. And Michael, thank you for having me on the programme this morning. It's look, I love Ardeshna. It's the highlight, I suppose, of the political calendar for each of the political parties. You know, it's a coming together to look really at work that has been achieved and the work that remains to be done. And you're 100% correct. The focus this year very much so will be on the local elections and the European elections. And you know, we have very, very fine candidates, many of whom are already serving in the positions and have given excellent service and bring, I suppose, really experience and determination and focus to their roles. And equally so, we have a large number of new candidates who are stepping forward for the first time as well. So it's an excellent blend of experience and new opportunities, and all of it with the ultimate aim to provide appropriate service, good level service to local communities and indeed at a European wide surface as well.
Okay, laudable if achieved, and I suppose that's a fairly significant caveat, and maybe we'll talk about some of the bigger national issues in a moment, but I want to ask you about a very important local issue and how children in Lismullen are going to school in a dilapidated building that was built 65 years ago. It was accepted onto the new school build list in 2007, 17 years ago. Will the school ever be built?
Look, I can't speak to the previous 17 years. I can only speak about the last number of years under this government, and I want to be very, very clear. My friend and colleague, Minister Thomas Byrne, has consistently raised this school with me, as indeed is Minister Helen McEntee. It is very much on my radar. I know that there have been issues there around tenders and then having to re-tender and planning permissions and, you know, having to get new planning permission and everything else. But I can say that it is now at the completion of the tender stage, and that's being finalised now. I can also say that just yesterday I announced €800 million specifically for projects who are completing the tender stage. And in the next coming weeks and months, we will be announcing the individual schools who are falling into that bracket. So,
can you be any more specific? When can people expect a sod to be turned?
Well, again, I can say to you, you know, this has been quite an exceptional, instance of a school where there have been significant challenges, as I said already, whether it was around tendering and re-tendering and planning permission and new planning permissions and a variety of issues of that nature. But it has now come to the final stages of the tendering process. I announced funding yesterday in terms of the €800 million for projects like that who will complete the tendering stage and will move into construction. And, you know, there's a number of those projects, at least 90 around the country, and they will be announced in due course in the coming weeks.
But you can't commit to any time frame at this stage.
Well, I think, to be fair, I think it's a very positive that I can say to you that the funding is in place. I think it's a very positive thing that I can say to you that the tender process is now being completed. And I don't think it would be fair to any of the 90 projects to announce one, or two or three without them having fully completed the tendering process. I can tell you that it's nearing that process now, and that we have the funding in place to advance the projects that are completed to construction.
Okay. Minister, do you believe that Fianna Fáil will get a drubbing in the local elections, given how annoyed some people are with your performance in government?
I don't for one minute think that. I think, to be fair, I think we're very, very fortunate with the calibre of candidates that we have. Many of them existing councillors who, on the ground, locally, committed to the communities, are giving great service. Likewise, from a European point of view. And I suppose, really, look, if you want to talk about what we're doing nationally, I mean, I can specifically reference, you know, what I'm doing nationally in my own department, and I can speak to the fact that under my leadership in the department, we now have free school books at primary school.
If you can get a school place.
Post-primary.
If you can get a school place.
And again, just in relation to that, if you specifically want to reference school places, we have over €1.2 billion being expended every single year over the last 4 years, and in excess of that on occasion, to ensure that we have new school builds, that we have school extensions, we have places being made available. And where there are, and I absolutely concede that there has been in some areas an explosion in population, we are ensuring that those additional places are being made available. I want to acknowledge the work that's been done by schools specifically on the ground, whether it's in terms of putting in place modular accommodation or extensions or, as I said, new school builds. And I have just referenced you there the €800 million that's been made available for new school builds going forward.
So
I don't think we've been found lacking in terms of school building, nor indeed I can point to the school transport system, which is of huge, huge benefit, and we've kept the cost of school transport at €50 and €75 between primary and post-primary. And that's a cost actually to an individual family of €1,100 if they had to pay the full cost. And we're asking at primaries if they would pay €50.
Okay, but
we've been very cognizant of the need to deliver on the ground.
Where are children going to go to school if, as the Irish Times reported, 3 out of 4 parents are unable to secure places in oversubscribed secondary schools? Is it in prefabs?
Well, again, I think we've moved on very much so from the world of prefab, and we now have modular builds, which I have inspected and seen myself, and I would invite anybody to take a look at them. They are fantastic accommodations. They are state of the art, and they're on a standing and on a par with anything that's bricks and mortar. And indeed, the school system itself will recognise that. So where there has been occasion and it's been required for immediate provision of school places, we've put in place the modular build. We will continue to do that.
Will you be able to get teachers, enough additional teachers to go into these modular builds to teach these children?
Well, indeed, we have 75,000 teachers presently in the system. We have, again, in my term under the last 4 years, we have reduced the pupil-teacher ratio to 23 to 1 students. We have also ensured that in our special classes, we have one teacher and two SNAs to six pupils. So therefore, that means there is a requirement for more and more teachers. We are seeing more and more teachers coming out. We've increased the number of places primary school training colleges. We have ensured that student teachers, once they complete their PME, that they get a bursary of €2,000. We have also ensured that there are pathways for teachers who are trainee teachers, that they can come on board as subs. We've provided pathways for retired teachers. We've lifted restrictions on those who might job share or whatever. We've ensured that students who train, we say, in the UK, that they can complete their induction in Ireland. We've looked at a whole suite of measures, and we will continue to look at more going forward.
Okay, so
we
very have good. Very good, Minister, but it doesn't do anything to help the educational needs of a child who's been taught by an unqualified teacher. We live in a country where children are being taught on occasion by unqualified teachers. It's not good enough, is it?
But again, when you speak, and that's an absolute exception, and I'm glad that you have said on a rare occasion that that might happen. But where that does happen, all these staff do have third level degrees, and they may well be in the process of completing their teaching degree in terms of their postgraduate teaching degree or diploma. And that is the exception rather than the norm. As I said, we've never had as many teachers in the system. We, in actual fact, have 8,000 more teachers teaching in the system than we did in the last 4 to 5 years. Quite a phenomenal uptake of positions being made available in schools. And indeed, as I said, we've reduced the pupil-teacher ratio. I don't think anybody would have wanted us not to do that. That meant more teachers were required. We've also introduced systems in many schools where we have team teaching, where we have more than one teacher teaching in a classroom. We could have two teachers teaching in a classroom. Mm. And as I said, in special education, we have more than 3,000 special classes in the system, two-thirds of them now directed under this government. We've had 7 special schools opened by this government and another 4 coming in September. And all of those, in terms of our special classes, one teacher, 6 pupils, 2 SNAs. So we've kept, you know, all those ratios down, and we've increased the number of teachers into the system for the benefit of the pupils. And I think that's been worthwhile.
I'm sure you won't argue, though, with the point that we're training a lot of people to become teachers only for them to move overseas because they can't afford to buy a house in this country.
Well, again, just in relation to that, I want to acknowledge, look, from time to time, in my own time, I've known as well, at various times in their lives, young people make the decision to go abroad. Some do it to, I suppose, sample new places and new cultures, and others, I absolutely accept, are doing it presently because they feel that they get, you know, that they will earn more while they're abroad. But I do want to acknowledge that, you know, teachers who teach, whether it's in the EU or whether they teach in the UK, their service is recognised when they return to Ireland. I want to acknowledge as well that we have 75,000 teachers who are actually here at home, working at home. And we will never eradicate the situation where people have freedom of choice to go abroad should they so wish to.
But qualifications elsewhere, time served elsewhere, not recognised when they return, which is deterring people from coming back.
That's not fully true. As I've said to you, service abroad in terms of if they're in an EU country, it's recognised in Ireland. Yeah. If they're in the UK, it's recognised in Ireland.
If they go to Australia.
If they're in a private school, we'll say, in a non-EU country, there is an issue there. It is recognised at primary level. The question of it being recognised at post-primary level is a matter for the Teacher Conciliation Council and a budgetary consideration, and that is where it's at presently. And I have been very clear, nothing is off the table there either.
Yeah, well, a key problem, as you have recognised, is housing and the cost of housing. An issue that Fianna Fáil blamed Fine Gael on before the last election and said it would solve and took up the housing portfolio. Darragh O'Brien, his record really is not one to be proud of, is it? Given that we've the highest house prices in the country, the highest rents in the country, and more people homeless than ever before. 14,000 people now without a place to call home, and 4,000 of those are children. It's shameful, really, isn't it?
Well, again, just to give the actual facts in relation to where we are here, and I absolutely want to concede that, you know, there are challenges. There are challenges in many respects, you know, and there will always be challenges in a country. We are a country now, though, at near full employment. I think that's an important consideration. In terms of achievements in housing, I think it's important to be able to say that in the last 4 years, more than 100,000 homes have been built in this country. 12,000 of them have been provided from a social housing point of view.
Nowhere near enough.
Measures have been
nowhere near enough. I mean, I don't know if the Taoiseach was having a swipe at Dara O'Brien when he said we'll build 250,000 houses over the next 5 years. Dara O'Brien very pleased this morning that we are going to build 35,000 houses this year. There's never been a moment in Irish history where there have been as many people who have nowhere to live. 14,000 people, and the cost of accommodating them is through the roof.
But again, just in respect of the reference you made to the Taoiseach there, the Taoiseach has said that this will be done over a five-year period. Minister O'Brien himself, and he hasn't stipulated that 50,000 would be done in each year. It would be greater in some years than in others. Minister Dara O'Brien himself, there's currently a review of the targets that have been set, and he himself has indicated a number of months ago and again confirmed today that those targets will increase. In terms of those who are in emergency housing accommodation, I absolutely want to accept that there are higher numbers there than normal. We also have a higher number of people coming into the country than we've had before. That obviously has an impact there. Mm. But equally so, Minister O'Brien has said very clearly that those who are exiting emergency accommodation are faster in the process now than ever before.
Okay, so, I wanted to ask you about
much more work to be done, but a lot of work has been done. Okay, but I absolutely accept more work is to be done.
All right. A lot to done, more to do, as the old Fianna Fáil say. I wanted to ask you about health. Our time is running out and there's so many questions about health, but the Irish Cancer Society shocked everybody this week. I don't think anybody believes that it is acceptable that we live in one of the wealthiest countries in the world and that the Fianna Fáil Minister, Stephen Donnelly, has not funded cancer services, which will result, it seems, in unnecessary deaths. How can anybody stand over that?
Well, I think, again, if we're to look at this in the round, significant funding has been made available right across the health sector in terms of we have the highest number of staffing in the health sector that we've ever had before, but specifically in terms of cancer care, we know that because of the funding that has been injected into cancer care, we've had greater life expectancy, earlier detection of
€0 in the last budget for developing new services. Out of the last seven budgets, on two occasions, money has been allocated to new cancer services. On five occasions, there's been nothing. How can the Fianna Fáil Minister, Stephen Donnelly, stand over that, given that he's running a health service at an overrun of €1 billion or so?
But again, I suppose I would have to point to the fact that, you know, we've never had as much money, as you have said yourself there, going into the health service. We have some services are being particularly targeted at particular times, and so significant funding going in at particular times into certain areas within the health sector.
We've all the money in the world.
For example.
We've all the money in the world.
Absolutely. And yeah. I'm saying we have a very broad and a very wide health service. And so the injections of money at different times need to be prioritised at different times into different areas. And you cannot argue with the fact that significant funding has gone into cancer care.
No, we have a strategy. We have a strategy and we have a commitment to fund that strategy. We haven't funded it. People are going to die unnecessarily, prematurely.
I think now, to be fair, you need to look at the actual outcomes that we have presently in this country. Because I think that's a statement that you're making there now that is very frightening to people.
Yes,
I think people need
that was made by
reassured.
The Irish Cancer Society.
And again, I'm just giving it its context. I think we have to be able to say that in this country we're seeing greater outcomes for people who undergo cancer care. We're also seeing earlier detection of cancer. We're also, for example, I know myself right across the country in terms of cancer care, just this last year, for the first time ever, those who are providing support services within the community for cancer care. All of those voluntary organisations, for the first time ever, received funding from the department in relation to a provision of those support services, whether they're counselling services, therapeutic services or whatever, and they're stretched right across the entire country. And I know that for a fact also.
Yeah. Okay, Minister, I'm out of time, over time, and thank you for your time.
Norma Foley, speak with you,
Michael. Thank you. You indeed. Norma Foley is the Minister for Education.
Michael Reid on LMFM.
Now let's return to the issue of road safety. We're joined by the Sinn Féin spokesperson on transport, Martin Kenny. And a very good morning to you, and thank you indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. There's obviously an awful lot of attention on road safety given the carnage on Irish roads last year and indeed this year. Lives lost unnecessarily for the most part, and a lot of attention on the policing of those roads. It hasn't increased at all over the course of 7 years to speak of.
No, I got a reply from the Minister for Minister of Justice, Helen McEntee, only yesterday in respect of this. And in the reply, she said that in February 2024, there were 627 members of the road policing unit compared to 623 in 2017. That's an increase of 4 in 7 years. No, frankly, I'm surprised that the Minister has admitted such a level of failure. But we see it on the roads. We see it, everyone that drives the road sees that we don't have the level of Gardaí on the roads that we had in the past. Over a decade ago, there was over 1,000 Gardaí in the road policing units, and it has gone down substantially since then. A lot of the emphasis has gone on to the GoSafe vans being used, the speed camera vans being used. And while they have a role to play, they're not, you know, at the same level of detection as having the Gardaí doing that work, because they only detect speed and nothing else. Mm. You know, if you had the Gardaí out on the roads, and I welcome the move yesterday from the Commissioner that the rank and file Gardaí will do more road policing work, because if the Gardaí are patrolling the roads or checking speeds or manning checkpoints, things like that, they also detect, you know, suspects for burglaries, people that are moving drugs on the roads, vehicles that are stolen. The roads network are used by criminals, and having the Gardaí out on the roads is one of the best ways we have of detecting all of that, as well as making our roads safer for people to use.
Do you understand how that's going to work in reality? Each guard has to spend half an hour each day policing roads. It's a very vague directive, isn't it?
It is a vague directive, and I assume what will happen is it will be down to the discretion of the local sergeant who will be in charge of the Gardaí in their area to ensure that, you know, there is a more intensive level of roads policing taking place. And that's really, I think, where it's coming from and what needs to happen. But like I say, I welcome anything that helps in road detection of and more enforcement of the rules of the road, because we have had a huge problem over the last year, and certainly the first half of this year has been, you know, terrible, the number of deaths we've had on our roads. But it's not just policing, and I think, you know, we need to recognise that. It's also about education. It's also about having better roads for people to drive on. Right. Many of these accidents happen on roads where you have serious or bad bends or dangerous junctions. Local authorities have been for years trying to get money from government to improve them. So we need to improve those parts of the road as well and make them more safe.
That's what you're trained to do. As a qualified driver, you should be trained to drive in line with those conditions, and you should understand it in order to pass a driving test. And I'd argue that for the most part, people know what they should be doing, even if that's not what they're doing. It's not a question of telling people you shouldn't be speeding or drinking or wearing a seatbelt or on your phone. People know they shouldn't be doing that, but they do it anyway.
Well, they do it anyway, and there's some of that is that there isn't the deterrent there, there isn't the level of detection there. But there are also issues, and I come back to the fact that so many of our young people are dying on our roads and are involved in collisions. And, you know, the Road Safety Authority are in charge of the essential driving training, which we have, which, you know, the driving instructors do. You have to do a mandatory of 12 lessons. That's the lowest in Europe. Most countries have 20, 25 and sometimes 30 lessons before you can get sitting your driving test. Yeah. And the driving instructors tell me that, you know, yes, they can train people to be good drivers, but they'd need more lessons and they'd need to have that syllabus improved in order to ensure that people are more safety conscious, particularly young people when they go out on the roads. There's also, I think, an argument that maybe after the first year of driving that people should have to sit maybe a number of other driving lessons so that any bad habits they develop could be corrected. You know, I think we need to have a greater emphasis on training our young people more. There's also technology we can bring into play here, which can ensure that people can't be using phones while they're driving. There's apps you can put on your phone, but when it's moving at a certain speed that the phone won't work. We need to be doing things like that because there's also issues there where, you know, trying to text while driving, answering phone calls, you know, all of those distractions are causing some of these accidents.
Well, you see it all the time. I mean, it's so noticeable, especially at traffic lights, that the car in front of you doesn't take off because the person in front of you has their head down and they're on the phone. But you see all sorts of bad things. People don't seem to drive with other drivers in mind, with the flow of traffic in mind, and all of the things that make it work properly and best for everyone. I mean, you see people driving down the street blowing their horn to say hello to somebody. Other cars behind them are going, what did I do? What's going on? Or you see cars parked at traffic lights and you'd fit a bus in the space between them and the car in front of them. Meanwhile, somebody can't get across a junction or around a corner because the traffic is backed up. I mean, I know they're only little things. You see, people don't indicate. I remember being in a taxi years ago and the driver telling me, I use my mirrors, I don't indicate. You know, just stuff they make up themselves. Instead of believing that there's rules of the road that we all are obliged to follow, because when you talk about those simple things, I think everything else follows on from it. If you do everything right, that's one thing. But once you start to slip a little bit, well, then you might sort of put your foot down a bit harder than you should be and driving faster and so on. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Well, absolutely. I think, you know, it's about bad habits that people develop. And, you know, we need to have a means of correcting those bad habits early in life, if possible, because they are what caused the problems. You know, if a person is continually taking a left-hand turn very wide and dangerously, that could be corrected. And it should be corrected early on. And that's where I think the driving instructor part of it comes in, so that young drivers are trained better how to drive. There's also, I think, you know, a role in bringing it home to people, the impact that accidents have. You know, I think it was Mayo County Council ran an event in the last couple of weeks where they had young people in, and some of it was quite harrowing, where they seen pictures of, you know, the terrible injuries that people have in road traffic accidents. It really need to shock treat people into realising, you know, that the minutes distraction they have on the road or the seconds distraction they have on the road could change the lives of themselves or others forever. And all of those things need to happen. But I come back to where we started in the beginning, you know. A major part of this is also, of course, about policing it. And we have to have, you know, adequate levels of Gardaí out there policing our roads and ensuring that we have an implementation of the rules of the road for everyone so that people have adequate deterrence in place.
Yeah, and about 500,000 more people living in this country than was the case 7 years ago for extra Gardaí policing the roads, as you highlighted at the outset. Thank you indeed for joining us this morning. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much.
Kelly Sinn Féin's spokesperson on transport. Some comments coming to us. Siobhan Fenton in touch by email wondering if... Oh, no, that's... I beg your pardon. I have an email here, though, from N. Finnegan. A very moving item with Susan Gray on road fatalities this morning. Michael, isn't it time the focus moved to local politicians and road planning? I've previously emailed you regarding very dangerous roads on the Mill Road, Mornington, with the risk of fatalities being ignored by local politicians. The road has a series of blind, steep hills with three schools and numerous houses. However, unlike nearby areas of Donnacarney and Beddingstown, there are no traffic calming measures in place, and the road is like a speedway at peak periods. Just how politicians and planners ignore such risks is beyond belief. Noel Finnegan, thank you for your email, michael@lmfm.ie, our email address. A WhatsApp message from somebody who says, Michael, on local link bus lately, on the bus for another 7 kilometres, no stops from the time I got on till I was getting off, and the driver was on the phone for the whole journey. I said it to him and he told me to mind my own business. Well, I'm sure you could report that. Maggie texting saying, "Mother of God, Michael, what planet is Norma Foley on? The shortage of teachers is unreal. Schools screaming out for teachers. That is the fact. I'm a parent. What is happening in secondary schools is disgraceful. No teachers." Another text from somebody who says, "The speed of traffic on the Ballymakenny Road, cars including construction lorries are going at, is far over the limit. It's like a speedway. When I rang the RSA, they said to get in touch with the local radio and ring the Garda. When I rang the Garda, she asked, how did I know they were speeding?" Okay. Another text from somebody who says, "A woman passed me on the motorway the other day, passed me and overtook four lorries with mobile phone in left hand holding onto the steering wheel." And John Conlon in Ballymakenny says, "Phones shouldn't work when the car is started, not even passengers' phones. Phones should only work for emergency numbers." I'm sure in this day and age there's some technology out there that can do that. Probably so, John. Thank you for the suggestion. Thank you for the text. And thanks for making contact.
Michael Reid on LMFM.
Now let's go to Dundalk and speak once again with Mandy Kelly, where she is living without her two children who were abducted from her in 2022 when she was on holiday in Cairo with her partner, who abducted the two young children. Mandy, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us once again on the programme today. I understand you met with the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, yesterday. What can you tell us?
So, yes, I finally got the opportunity to meet with Justice Minister Helen McEntee yesterday at the Department of Justice. The meeting was cordial, and I felt that I was listened to, and I was given the opportunity to raise very important issues, including obviously the fact that a bilateral agreement between Ireland and Egypt is required, especially when I have utilised every diplomatic channel that has been available to me, including having my case raised in the Dáil and in the Shannon by Senator Erin McGrehan and Senator John McGahan. My case has also been to the Justice Oireachtas Committee, the Foreign Affairs Oireachtas Committee and the Petition Oireachtas Committee. And the President's PA is even aware of my case, and I have explained to you before that I've even been to meet with Mr. Micheál Martin to discuss my case in detail. So yesterday was a huge day for me to be able to sit down finally with Helen and give an overview of my case to date.
And you're being blackmailed, really, aren't you? There's a ransom on your children's heads.
Yes, there is. Finally, I can, you know, speak a little bit more in detail about that. There's a cash ransom of €500,000 on my children. And now the fact that European arrest warrants are to be issued in the coming days, last weeks, the case is now a criminal matter. It's no longer a civil case. And this is something that I have had to work incredibly hard to try and convince key politicians that this is not a civil matter. This, my children are technically hostages. If you look up the definition of a hostage is someone that's been kept captive. My two kids have been kept captive in a foreign land. Like, my children are Irish-born citizens. Egypt is not, yes, they may have dual nationality, but Ireland is their home. Egypt is not their home. Mm.
They're growing up not knowing their mother.
It's a crime against humanity. Yeah. My youngest son was 16 months when this happened, and my other son is three. And they have not seen their mother in 2 years. Regardless of Hague Convention, regardless of trade agreements, regardless of, you know, trying to poke the other side in an incorrect way, what has happened to my two kids, who, as I said, are Irish-born citizens, this is a crime against humanity.
And we're all human. The minister, like anybody else, is human. And Helen McEntee is mother of two young children herself. So I'm sure she must have been able to empathise or understand
Yes, I could fully see that. And it was really nice, to be honest with you, Michael, not having key politicians, male politicians, just like I've had experience of mansplaining, that I've been in a room and just been basically, you know, spoken down to at times, and been criticised for not taking civil action in Egypt, when, like, by taking civil action in Egypt, I would have been stranded in Egypt with my children, not being able to return. So they were technically trying to trap me in a foreign land. And by saying to me that the best interest of my children would be for their Irish mother to go to a foreign land where she has no connections, where she doesn't have her own home, where she doesn't have her own job, where she doesn't enjoy any of the freedoms that she has in her own country, and basically, you know, convincing her to go to that country, get a custody order, which has no legal weight at all, and then fight for years for a return order. They believe that is in the best interest of two Irish citizens who have been stranded in a country for 2 years. Like, but it's shambolic.
But you felt you got a different reception from Helen McEntee, the minister.
Yes, 100%. She was at least empathetic and she listened and she really understood the complexities of the case. And because of her former colleague, Mr. Alan Shatter, who in 2014 had raised it with the Egyptian authorities, the requirement of a bilateral agreement, she could see that this needs to be raised again. This is urgent, especially when there's a cash ransom on two small children. And to be honest with you, Michael, I really do believe that I have been incredibly respectful and careful with how I've gone about this. As I said, I really want this to be resolved in a via diplomatic channels.
Yeah.
And like us, and I understand there's really good relations between Ireland and Egypt. Yeah. And I'm the last person that wants to tamper it's time for action.
I don't know. I'm kind of upset to hear you feel that you have to justify how you've gone about trying to get your children back.
I know, it is. Yes. Well, I am thankful. I am really appreciative that the Egyptian authorities have been sympathetic to date. They understand that this is not just a love tug case. This is a case regarding criminality. And I do know they have actually informed me that my ex-partner has a criminal past in Egypt. So I really would hope that they would continue to in their efforts to do the right thing. And the right thing is for my two sons to be returned to Ireland, and I am going to fight that my ex-partner does a prison sentence in order for it to be a deterrent for others to not commit such a horrific crime against children and against against a parent.
Okay, Mandy, I'm running out of time, sorry.
No problem.
But can I just conclude by asking, are you feeling a bit more optimistic after meeting with
the
minister?
Yes, I was really hopeful after yesterday's meeting. And due to yesterday's meeting, my case is in all, it's all over the newspapers, the main newspapers today, and Virgin Media took my story yesterday. So yes, I am more positive.
Okay. Well, publicity can affect change, and hopefully whatever it is that leads to a change in your circumstance and the circumstances of your children, that it happens and that
I sent a very loud message to the Irish government yesterday that this Irish mother is not going away. I fought for 2 years, and if it takes another 2 years, I will still be there. I will still be there outside government buildings fighting for my children.
Okay. Mandy, thank you for joining us again.
Thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Mandy Kelly in Dundalk. That's our programme for today. God willing, we'll see you for our next programme tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. right here, Monday morning at 9 a.m. right here on LMFM. Good morning. Goodbye.
The Michael Reid Show podcast. Tune in weekdays from 9 on LMFM. To contact us, email now, michael@lmfm.ie.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.